Welcome. Hello. Highfalutin Ski Bum Podcast number 60.
60.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you again for listening. It is your host, Mario and Brian. Mario, what's going on, dude?
Everything's going on. I can't believe we're 60 years into this.
60 years, huh? It's been a long time. You know, we were young men back in 1964 when this started, apparently, or 54.
Exactly. You did the quick math. That's better than me.
56.
56.
Something like that. Yeah. 60 episodes. It's been quite a journey so far, huh?
I can't believe it. It's good. And we're still, you know, the summer, I like the summer because it's a little relaxed. But then we really ramp up, and I got a feeling we're going to be, like, really hitting stride when we hit ski season at the rate we're going, which is good.
Oh, yeah, definitely. More info, check us out, skibumpodcast.com. Check us out on all of our social media outlets, twitter.com/skibumpodcast, facebook.com/skibumpodcast, instagram.com/skibumpodcast. Go to iTunes, subscribe, rate us. We'd appreciate that very much. So this week,
we're on Stitcher.
You can subscribe there too. It's been a big Olympic week. It's been a hot week, at least where we are. I mean, there was like real feel temperatures of like 107 today. It was hot and brutal, but we're still getting all those emails, you know, ski buying, you know, guides are coming out.
Yeah, even nice
from evo.com, all 2017 ski gear is here. So
this is like the time of year where it's like Thanksgiving to Christmas. Like, it's kind of like for ski, like the ski season, like everybody's talking about shit right now. It's like really ramping up.
It's almost like this is like the what's the official term? They say it's always darkest before dawn.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's almost pitch black right now. It's super hot. It's gross. It's sticky. But in a couple of days, a couple of weeks, it's just going to snap. All of a sudden, it's going to start getting darker sooner. It's going to start cooling down, and everyone's going to get that fired up pumpkin spice latte feeling knowing that ski season is around the corner. So,
well, I like it. We're highfalutin black. It's kind of like you have a gold card, and then you have your platinum card, and then you have black. Like, we're black right now.
We ask ourselves, how much more black can we be? And the answer is none. None more black.
None. Dude, I sat out in tan today. I'm pretty black.
Are you?
I got very tan.
I just sat in the air conditioning, bitching about how hot it was. Went out a couple times, and it just dripping
dude,
sweat.
When I get this tan, people mistake me for being Indian. It's pretty fucked up.
Do you really? Nice.
Oh, yeah. It's good. It's golden. It's golden.
You should grow a nice, big, burly mustache to complete the look.
Oh, the championship mustache.
Awesome. Your fingernails long. And you can get that solid gold 18 karat gold shirt like that dude we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yes, the solid gold shirt.
He got murdered for his $350,000 gold shirt.
I know why he got murdered, because he got a goddamn gold shirt. You have a gold shirt, you got to be murdered. I'm just saying.
He's asking for it at that point.
Yeah. Your Honor, he had a gold shirt. Case closed.
And may God have mercy on you.
That's right. Much mercy on your soul.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about this week, Bri?
All right. So this week, you know what? We're gonna kick it off. We're starting to, you know, think about all the things that need to happen before ski season starts. And one of the things we're gonna look at is Kickstarter and some of the other crowdfunding sites to see what people are trying to put together in the summertime to get funding for, so that hopefully they can get these great products out to us by the time ski season starts.
I love the concept too, because you know what? I've been thinking about putting a Kickstarter to go to Ski Antarctica next year.
Yeah.
GoFundMe us. Like, we want to do a show from fucking Antarctica skiing, backcountry.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
That would be awesome.
We have a few fans that reached out to us. I think they might be supporters of us.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
We'll give a shout out to our boy Frank.
Yeah.
He's one of our super fans. So thank you, Frank, for listening. We really appreciate it.
Frank's the man. Frank the Tank.
Keep doing your thing, man. We appreciate the love. And we're trying to keep putting out a great product, so you keep listening. Keep spreading the word. So
that's right.
With that, Mario.
With that, it's time for... Oh, yeah.
There it is.
It's time for the weekly flavor. You know what time it is.
Oh, I know what time it is.
So, Weekly flavor, Brian. What are you drinking?
So since it's, you know, in summertime, I like to have, you know, some beers, obviously some lighter beers, but I also really like my tequila. So I'm breaking out my good stuff today because I'm trying to usher in the fall and ski season. So with this,
let me ask you this question though. When you drink your tequila, you have it with the lime and the salt, right?
Oh, what? How often can you drink tequila? You know, just lime and salt always.
Let's give a little education to people, like drop some knowledge on people if they don't know. Like, Brian, is that usually done?
Oh, well, it's the classy way to drink tequila, right? I mean, how else can you possibly drink it?
If you're in college, that's the way to drink it.
But yeah, when... I mean, yeah, I think I've mentioned on the podcast before, one of my most horrifying moments I've ever witnessed. This was like my 9/11. I mean, it was that bad. I saw this freaking girl order a bunch of tequila shots for her friends. She's celebrating, you know, some Wii U thing.
That was at Mount Snow, wasn't it?
Ah, it could have been. I was
there, and we wanted to just, like, smack them out of
the- I don't know if it was Mount Snow or I think it maybe was, and it's she hard. ordered like Patron, and she got it with the salt and the lime.
Patron Silver too.
And I'm just like, what are you doing? Do you have any idea what you're drinking? Like, just no idea. This isn't freaking Senior Frogs, you know, junior year spring break.
Oh my god, I'm so drunk.
The dip in my tequila shots where they're like pouring out of like a basin. Or like a trough.
She needed Everclear at that point. I'm just saying.
Oh, it was just watching her do that with the Patron just really, I mean, it offended me to the core. It really did. So, you know, at that moment, it just sticks in my head as one of those moments. Like, I really wish I just went over there and just backhanded her before she did it. But I did not come a gentleman, and I would never do that. I love a lady.
You would have corrected the bad activity. You'd have, you know.
Just someone saying. Should have. Someone, you know what? Now
hopefully
it's on my
someone will.
On my conscience now that I did not go and remedy that situation. So now all I can do is just keep drinking good tequila and spreading the word. So I am drinking a Don Julio 1942, which is a Añejo tequila. It has been aged for 2.5 years. When you smell it, you just get a vanilla bomb. It's got a light oak flavor as well, and it is out of this world.
Nice.
And it's even better with salt and lime.
But how are you drinking that right now?
I'm drinking it in a – I'm actually drinking it out of a whiskey snifter.
Nice. That's how it should be, right?
I did put one ice cube in it, but usually I've done it – it's so drinkable. You can just drink it straight, but, you know, cool it down a little bit, meld it out a bit because I know I needed to – can get too hammered for the podcast. So it's dynamite. I love this stuff.
That's good. It's funny. I've talked to bartenders before when you see people order stuff like that. And when I've ordered it too, I'm like, well, what's the right way to drink it? I've asked because I'm like, I don't know. And you know, it always helps to ask because they will tell you how not to be an asshole. So if you ask a bartender, they're like, well, this is how you should drink this tequila. And usually they put in like some of them had put a brandy snifter or like a whiskey glass and they'll actually educate you. So ask, especially if you had a good bar, they'll be like, hey, this is how you should drink it, but they'll serve it however you want. If you want to drink that tequila, Brian, with a lime and some salt and maybe lick it off of the girl's neck next to you, they'll serve it to you that way if that's how you want to drink it.
They could make a tequila sunrise with it too for all they care. Yeah. They're still gonna charge you $40 for it either way. So
exactly. Hey, they'll serve it heavy, but it's good to ask a lot of times, like, how should I drink this? And you know what? You drop a little knowledge on yourself. It's good.
That's true. You know what? Never stop learning. That's the key.
That's right.
I'm telling you, put your nose in this thing, it's just a vanilla bomb. It's dynamite. It's so good.
Vanilla bomb.
Vanilla bomb, son.
I like that. I like that.
What do you got there?
What are your tasting notes? I have a vanilla bomb right here.
Vanilla bomb, son.
Do you know what a bomb is?
It's like if you took vanilla ice and just like put like a hydrogen bomb. Up him.
Blow up vanilla.
And dropped it. Yeah.
Boom. How you like that?
Yeah. So Mario, what are you drinking?
So I'm drinking, I like my pork products and I am staying with the pork theme. I'm drinking Whistle Pig 10-year-old straight rye whiskey.
Ooh, nice.
Boom. I tell you what, this is like, I love Whistle Pig as it is. I think Brian, you got me this for some, I don't know, fancy occasion. And I covered it now. I think we polished off at the ski house. I think one night we polished off a whole bottle of Whistle Pig. It was fucking great.
Oh, that we've definitely destroyed some Whistle Pig in our day.
I think it was the Vermont one, the special one. That was great. But I tell you what, I was thinking about this because I went to the wine store this week, and I saw they have the Whistle Pig Old World, which is like out of this world. Like also like 100, 105 bucks or something like that. On sale, 105
That's
bucks.
That's a good price, 105 bucks.
So I was almost going to pull the trigger. I'm like, nah, I bought some other shit. Like I bought like this crazy fancy extra virgin olive oil. I'm on this olive oil kick now. But I tell you what, I got home. I was like, I'm going to have some Whistle Pig. And that's the 10-year-old. I didn't realize until I was pouring. I was like, oh, I see the good stuff. So this is definitely a treat. If you like bourbon whiskey, this is more a bourbony. It's technically a rye whiskey. It's on the bourbony spectrum with a little whiskey hint. I wouldn't call it like a normal whiskey like you normally drink, but it's damn good. I like it.
Yeah, it's nice stuff. So that Old World one that you were just talking about, that's actually a 12-year.
Oh, another 2 years.
Yeah, they put it in a couple of different casks, it looks like, starting with the 10-year and then adding another couple of European oak casks to give it a different flavor.
So a lot of people would say, like, you know, how much does 2 years make? And I would say, hey, what's the difference between 16 and 18? That's what I'm saying.
It can make a very significant difference, especially to like bourbons and ryes, because they mature faster than a scotch would.
Yeah.
Just because of their preparation and their ingredients. And because too, when they finish it off, they finish it off in the casks that usually give it some unique characters, like the Whistle Pig 12-year, they put it in, I think it's Madeira and sherry casks. So those have, you know, unique, strong characteristics that are very different than what you get in a regular bourbon. Because bourbon, by definition, cannot be finished off in anything.
Right.
It has to be aged in an unused, new, charred American oak barrels.
That's why it's a little bit sweeter. It doesn't have that it's a different taste. When you taste a whiskey versus a bourbon, bourbon's like sweet and it's new. Whereas a whiskey tastes a little bit older, a little more character, but I don't know. I love the bourbon flavor, but this is like one of the few whiskeys like on the whiskey spectrum that I like, that I'll dabble in. I like it.
Well, bourbon is a whiskey. The rye is just uses the bourbons use at least 51% corn mash, while the ryes use more the rye base, which makes them a little drier, usually a little spicier. And your rye's got some unique characteristics to it. But well, yeah, once you add the rye and you give it into those different wine casks, you get some really cool results. So that's why Whistle Pig is starting to get, you know, some big time traction, because they're doing some really, really cool stuff.
I remember when we first had, like, you had told me about Whistle Pig, and I was like, oh no, it's all right, whatever. I never tried it. And then, you know, you were like, oh, it's cool, you should try it. I was like, well, it's a whiskey. I'm like a bourbon guy. Because we actually almost went to another whiskey tasting, but you're going to be way.
Yeah.
So way back, many moons ago, we went to a bunch of whiskey tastings, and that's how we got a flavor for bourbons and whiskeys and what we like. And I realized then, I'm like, yeah, I really like all bourbons, but I'm not a big fan of whiskeys. Like, it's got to be like a few whiskeys, few and far between, really aged or just different flavor profile than like a normal whiskey. And I remember Brian saying, you know, this Whistle Pig is good shit. You got to try it. So I was like, yeah, all right, whatever. I'll try it. It's, you know, I'm not going to have a whole thing of it. So let me just try a little sip. And I was like, oh, this is good stuff. And yeah, ever since I've been on the Whistle Pig kick. Anytime I see it, I'm like, ah, Whistle Pig.
See, I bet you tried some good tequilas to change your mind about the delicious drink from Mexico.
Dude, our buddy John has a lot of good tequilas. He's a big tequila drinker. And I've tried a lot of tequilas. I'm like, something about it, I just not a big fan.
Still can't do it, huh?
Still can't do it. I mean, I'll drink it, but it's okay. I'll enjoy it like every once in a while, but like I'm not. It's not a go to for me. Like bourbon, I could probably drink like as a drink once in a while. You know, more like all the time. But like, oh, you want a drink? I have a bourbon. Sure, that's, you know, that hits the spot usually.
Yeah.
Nice hot day, 98 degrees. Yeah, perfect. Give me a bourbon house.
Yeah, perfect, pool. Right? But a mint julep.
Mint julep.
Cool it down. Yeah. All right. So we got our Ski News music.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yes, for Ski News. It is time for Ski News. So,
what do we got, Bri?
First off, the big story. Everyone's been talking about it all week.
Drum roll.
Vail Resorts is buying Whistler Blackcomb. It was finally announced earlier this week that Vail Resorts is buying Whistler Blackcomb for over $1 billion.
$1 billion. I wonder if they threw it out there just to fuck with them. Like, how much you want for a Whistler? Like, $1 billion. Okay.
Yeah, I've seen different numbers, but I've seen 1.06 billion all the way up to like 1.4 billion. So
I saw 1.4 this week. I'm like, I don't even know. Is it publicly disclosed?
I'm not exactly sure, but
well, Vail is publicly traded, so I don't know if they actually have to disclose the. They may have to.
I think they have to. Well, they're saying that it's a stock and cash transaction that's been unanimously approved by the boards of both Whistler and Vail Resorts.
I think there's a few things that come into play with the actual price, because one is the conversion of
Canadian to U.S., right?
Canadian to U.S., and then there's the stock to cash trade-off. So who knows where it's going to end up? I guess they're doing all that now. But.
Right. So saying the deal, it still has to be approved by the Whistler Blackcomb shareholders and Canadian courts. But they're expecting it to close this fall. And they're saying that for next year, they're going to add it to the Epic Pass, which,
yeah,
if you're an Epic Pass holder, is dynamite. But for this year, it's going to remain with the Mountain Collective Pass. So it's your last chance if you're a Mountain Collective Pass.
Better get your last hurrah on Mountain Collective. And I don't know what you're going to have after that.
Yeah. So this is a big move. And, you know, when you read a lot of the comments on this deal, a lot of people are not happy about it, just because a lot of people have seen their local ski resorts being purchased by Vail and then kind of fucking it up.
Vailitized.
And
yeah.
Just, you know, they tend to, you know, pick their favorites of their portfolio and suck dry the other ones to pump money into their favorites. So
it's like the Darth Vader of like the ski industry, is what people say.
It's like a succubus.
Yeah, succubus. I don't say it. I'm just saying this is what I've heard.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that it's great because – so part of this, they actually said it's because they're feeling pressure for the diversity of climate change to, like, diversify, like, where they have properties, mm-hmm. which I understand. It makes it – the idea is, in concept, it would make it more stable to run and operate ski areas across the world, right?
Right.
But in actuality, I mean, it's like the Walmart to moves into your town. It's the same idea. Puts all the little guys out of business. So who knows? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll wait and see. I know we talked about the, you know, Whistler's giant, their renaissance plan that's going to be happening over the next couple of years, where they're trying to add more, you know, non-ski season related, you know, amenities, so that, you know, with this climate change, they're kind of protecting themselves.
So that plan is huge, right? It's like $300, almost $400 million of stuff
it's
they're doing.
It's massive, yeah.
It's great. They said it's like the largest project of all ski areas right now.
Yeah, it's huge.
And it's not a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, seriously. And you know, ever since the deal went down, I've been kind of watching the Whistler Blackcomb stock. So I remember they were owned by somebody, and then they went public. I remember at least 4 or 5 years ago. And when I was there last time, the first time in 2013, I remember like, oh wow, what's Whistler? After being there, loving it, being like, oh, what's Whistler stock go for? And saw, you know, it was, you know, however many dollars. It wasn't super expensive. It was
what,
like,
did they open at? What did they IPO at? Because that would be crazy if you got like original shares.
They apparently went public on November 12th of 2010 for $12.
Wow.
Yeah.
God damn.
And then so
and
when
are
I
they
was
at
there,
now, like
I was like, oh wow, it was like $13 in 2013. But in the last week since the deal was announced, it went from $25 to now closing at $26.72 on Friday. So it's gained 45% since the deal was announced.
Wow.
So if you're a Whistler Blackcomb stockholder, you are having a very, very nice end of the summer.
What are you doing if you're Randolph and Mortimer? That's what I want to know. What
you're shorting frozen concentrated orange juice, obviously.
That's right. What would you do if you have a Roche Bocoe, which I did look up the other day. I was trying to buy one.
It was the Dukes. It was the Dukes.
God damn. The Dukes are trying to corner Whistler back home. It's like a whole rage.
Yep.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, so that's a huge story. So hopefully we can take a trip up there and get a close, upfront scene at what's going on up at Whistler. Make sure everything is still on the up and up.
Brian, I think we need closure on this, Brian.
We need closure.
We need closure.
That's really what it is.
We need to look them in the eye and be like, look them in the eye and we could tell what's going on.
Be like, Vale, draw me like one of your French girls. That's what we need.
That's, yeah, or something like that.
Along those lines. Ipso facto, really.
Ipso facto, right away. Boom, yeah. Ipso facto.
So huge deal. Huge deal, yeah, for Whistler and Vale.
I think if you've been hiding under a rock, that's the only way you would miss this being announced in the
Every big periodical, website, everybody's been talking about it. You know, USA Today, Bloomberg, I mean, everything. Every pretty much news source has talked about it.
It's crazy. It's
that big.
It is a big deal. And for the Dukes, they're cornering it. All right, so next we have a 27-year-old dude is going to buy a Colorado ski resort out of bankruptcy for $3.8 million. Now, it might not be the size of Vail or Whistler Blackcomb, but Echo Mountain Ski Resort filed for bankruptcy in February of this year, and they're one of the closest ski areas to Denver, the Denver metro area. So you can actually ski Denver from the hill, which is pretty neat. I guess, they like that claim to fame. But there's a 27-year-old University of Denver alumni, Peter Burwell, and he's under contract right now to buy the struggling ski area for $3.8 million. And I think it's pretty cool. So he is the son of a philanthropist who owned several Aspen hotels. And I guess he wants to follow in the footsteps and kind of own stuff, but also in a way, like help out like the local, local stuff that's going on. So they're on the block, and it's pretty interesting. It's a small ski area. The link we have has like a layout of Echo Mountain.
I mean, it's got 13 trails. It's tiny. It's only got 600 feet of vertical.
Yeah, it's not very big, but they do have a lot of land. If you look at the footprint, they have a ton of land, and I'm like, you could do a lot with that land. So, it might be getting it for a song. I mean, if you look at the size of the land that he's getting and that close to Denver, could be the Mountain Creek to New York City. Just saying.
Dare to dream.
Dare to dream. I mean, so I think it's cool to see for every bad story, there's something good that comes out of it. Now, I don't know if this is good. I mean, it's bad that the place is in bankruptcy, mm-hmm. but it's good they're not going to go like totally out and just shut her up. So, I don't know. It's interesting to see. He's a 27-year-old dude. I mean, that could be the Vegas of the ski area. Like, yeah. I said, 18 up to get in. Strippers are running the concession bar. I mean, it could work out.
It's quite possible, yeah.
If you want some advice, skibumpodcast@gmail.com. Just send me an email. I'll shoot you some ideas. I'll bounce some ideas off you.
Let us know what's up.
I got some ideas. Brian's heard it on the lift many a time, and they're not really great, but they're interesting, I gotta say.
I'll give you interesting.
Interesting is fair.
It's like hedonism on the mountain.
Oh, of course. He's got 226 acres of ski area, which could be ski and multi-use area, multi-purpose area. I'm telling you, there's a lot that can go on.
The wild women, the ripping and the tearing,
It's in Denver too. There is weed allowed.
It's true.
Why wouldn't you want to ski out of the weed yurt? That's what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Weed yurt.
You have the only ski place with a weed yurt. Boom. I'm there.
Yep. All right. And our last bit of ski news for the week. This was an article that Powder Magazine put out, and it's an interview with Angel Collinson. And we've talked about Angel a bunch of times on the podcast. Once because, we were watching the TGR movie last year, Paradise Waits, and she was, you know, a big part of that movie and did some sick lines. And then when we were out in Jackson, a couple of folks from our ski club, or I think they were renegades on the ski, from the ski club on the trip, they ran into her in the backcountry.
Actually, one was a former president, and the other guy was renegading on the trip. He was on the Vermont trip with us, yeah.
Yeah, so they actually ran into her in the backcountry, and were talking to her a bit, and hanging out with her.
That's an awesome story, too.
And she was super cool. So, yeah, she I'm not sure if we mentioned her when she got injured, but back in April, they were filming for the new TGR movie, Tight Loose, and she ended up having a bad fall and tearing her ACL. So she's just on the path to recovery now. And, you know, Powder interviewed her, asked her how she was doing, and just nothing but positivity. You know, she's just doing her thing and doing all of her her rehab exercises and trying to do more art and staying positive and getting ready for the season, which is awesome. And she already wants to go back to Alaska and get some redemption. So
that's awesome.
That's just that's a winner's attitude is what that is. You know,
well, so a few things out of this, which I love. It's like her annual trip to Alaska. I would love to have an annual trip to Alaska.
Yeah,
I'd like to have one trip to Alaska. It's freaking awesome world she lives in, but I think it's great she has such a good attitude.
Yeah. Yeah, like her quote at the end, she's like, I would say that it's really important to accept yourself for where you're at, and it's important to work hard and have discipline and goals. But really, the most healing thing is a good attitude and self-love. It's beautiful. That's
awesome. Dude, I'm self-loving myself getting back on a bike. See? I'm going to ride tomorrow, probably drink too much tonight, but I'll be out on the bike tomorrow for like 20 miles. Just, you know, hammer up some hills.
So you're pretty much our Angel Collinson.
She's my angel. That's what I'm saying.
Well, you're the podcast angel.
That's right. She's my inspirational angel.
There you go.
Yeah. I like it. It's kind of that cool, like, hey, you know, I'm just putting it out there and feeling good and good.
Yeah. All right. That wraps up ski news for the week. So now on to our main topic. Oh, there it is. Get the maracas out.
Maracas.
So we're going to kickstart it off right now. You know,
you're going to kickstart it.
Kickstart it off. Yeah. We're going to talk about some cool Kickstarter and Indiegogo projects that we have come across this week. We've done this before in the past, and I think it's cool because it's a great way if you're a small business or you're an entrepreneur and have a great idea, but you don't know about getting the funding and how to make it happen. You have this platform that already exists that you can leverage and you can try to make your product happen. We've sponsored a bunch of things on Kickstarter along the way, both personally and through the podcast. So we're pretty familiar with how it works, and we've been pretty happy with everything we've, you know, been sponsoring and been, you know, getting during you're doing these campaigns. So we're looking at a couple of cool new things, and some of these are trying to get, you know, wrapping up in the next few days, looking to get out before the season starts, or, you know, early into the season, which is great. So Mario, you want to kick it off with your big find here that you wanted to get?
Yeah. And I tell you what, like, you know, to follow what you just said though, like I was watching Shark Tank yesterday, and I was like, you know, you could either go through it seems a little bit degrading, Shark Tank, or you could just go through Indiegogo or Kickstarter and get your funding that way. Cause it's like, you know, I'm not going to badmouth Shark Tank, but I'm like, these people, like the way they put them through the ringer with the whole like questioning and all this bullshit. I'm like, you know what? You can't talk to somebody like a normal human being. You got to like degrade them just for fucking TV to get like funding for an actual product to have a livelihood. Like, people put sweat and tears into this thing, you know? Yeah. So that's why I'm a big supporter of like Indiegogo and Kickstarter. And like, I just love the concept of like, if you like it, hey, you know what? Only costs a few bucks. Go live your dream, you know?
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
So anyway, so the first thing I found was ending in, there's 9 days left, but they already met their goal, $500 goal. Which I don't understand, $500, that's like nothing. Like, that's like one dude with $500, like, hey, give me $500. Okay, cool.
Like, you really like, couldn't come with $500?
How many people do you not know? Like, you got to know somebody.
Yeah,
but anyway,
seriously. And I know like poor people I could ask $500.
Yeah, a homeless guy probably gets $500 in a day. No, I'll tell you, this product actually looked great. It's the world's first $60 magnetic snow goggle. Now, I love the fact that they want to keep the price point for goggles, because they actually say one of the reasons they started this whole concept and idea was they looked around and the price of goggles going up and up and up. Like, you can't touch a pair of Oakley goggles for like, what, under 180, 160 bucks?
Well, you can get some cheap ones for like 100, but.
Yeah, 100. So they want to keep theirs at about 60 bucks and have them where you can swap out the lens magnetically. So basically, the lens is held on with these high strength magnets, and you just pop it off and you pop the other goggle in, the other lens in. I'm like, this is genius, because you know what? If they have a patent on this, I don't know if they do, that would be great for even ski racers. Like, you get schmutz on them, you get scratch or whatever, you got to flop them out. You don't take the goggle off. You just pop out the lens and pop it back on. It's great.
Wow. Yeah. And they, I mean, the deals they have too for this Kickstarter campaign, I mean, $50 and you get a pair of these goggles.
Yeah. I think what's the low? 45, you get a pair.
Well, that one's already sold out, I think, right?
No, it says limited 150. Oh, no. No, that's open.
There's a $40 one left.
That's still open.
Yeah.
62 out of 150.
And they have a $75 one, but you get two of them.
Boom. One for me and you.
That's pretty awesome. And they got a purple t-shirt you can get too.
Boom. Hats, all that stuff. But I tell you what, I like these guys are just like, they only asked for $500. I'm like, I don't know what that $500 was for. Maybe to get, I don't know. Bales more than that. I don't even know.
Yeah, they really weren't asking much at all.
No. And they raised over $4,000, which, you know what? 4,000, I think, $4,000 or $5,000 should have been what they asked for. I mean, I don't know how they're making these things. They must have something hooked up already to make them. I love the design of them with the. Damn. See, there you go, Oakley. Why don't you do this?
Yeah. Making too much money there for Luxottica. Yeah, that Bilderberg company, Luxottica.
That's right. I tell you what, I've had the goggles you swap out, and everything is like, you got to push this lever, you got to squish it in here, or squish that. Like, no, you know what? You pop it off and pop it back on. That would be perfect. That's what I want.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. And, you know, they have the spare yellow lens you can get too. So I'm trying to see what colors they have here. I know they kind of talk about
colors. The red and the gray. It's a gray frame with a grayish blue lens, mm-hmm. and the other one's like a red with like a
mirrored like red iridium kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes, the iridium. I'm gonna buy it right now. Boom! I'm gonna
do it.
I'm shooting the J.
Nice.
$44. Boom, continue. I got like 12 pair of goggles, and I'm like, that's why I didn't do it the other day. And then I talked to Brian. I'm like, yeah, I still want to do it, man.
Now you got 13 pairs of goggles.
13 pair of goggles are going up on eBay, baby. And only one is goddamn magnetic like I wanted in the first place.
Right?
I'm telling you. Puts all those other goggles to shame.
Yeah, that's a really cool product. So, yeah, they are what is their name? They are the Gear Discounts is their – the creator's names, and it's called the world's first $60 magnetic snow goggle.
Boom.
Cool stuff.
Yeah, just go up on our website or look on Kickstarter, but we have the link right on the website.
Yep.
Keepitpodcast.com.
Bam. Look at you.
Boom.
That's how you sell some product placement. All right. So the next thing we found, now this one it's, I first saw it and I didn't quite get it. You know, because it's one of those things, if you don't know what you're looking at, you don't know what you're looking at. And this one is called the Carbon Ascender. And right now they've got $8,448 pledged so far, but they're looking for a goal of 20,000 and they have 3 days left. So they're going to
I don't think people understand it.
That's the problem. Yeah. I mean, we've looked at it too. And
it's genius.
It's absolutely genius. It's really cool. So what it is, it's this carbon fiber piece that fits into a regular binding, but gives you the flexibility and movement of a backcountry or, you know, an AT binding. So you get this piece and you're able to, it's got like a quick release bracket you put onto your, onto the regular binding and lock it into your boot. And it has that flexibility then of a, you know, backcountry binding.
It's awesome.
Really, really cool. But again, I think someone who's probably an engineer came up with this and is marketing it like an engineer would market things.
It's a Pied Piper all over again.
It is. It's the Pied Piper dilemma. Yeah.
I tell you what, like I told Brian about it. And I was like, you know what? When I looked at this thing, I had to look a few times because I didn't understand it. And then I watched the video. I'm like, oh, that's fucking genius.
Yeah.
So dude, I just pledged the $75 for the goggles. We're both getting goggles.
Oh, snap.
That's how we roll, bitch.
Nice.
All right. This is purchasing online.
This is happening in real time.
Real time. And my credit card was accepted. Boom. Hey, like.
Liblau.
Yeah, that's right. All right. So we're getting some magnetic goggles.
Nice.
I would go in what do you call them? The Ascenders. I like those.
Let's get two pairs of those too.
Two pairs. I hate when a Kickstarter doesn't go. I'm kind of like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah.
Oh, they only had like $500 yesterday.
Oh, really?
It was tiny. It was less than 1,000. And now it's like 8,000. I'm like, holy shit. They got 3 days to go. So they really, they got some people.
So now the company that does that, it's KF Skis is their brand. So they actually make skis as well.
Yeah, I didn't look them up for that. This thing is genius, though.
Yeah, it really is pretty.
Carbon fiber. So it's like, you know, lightweight.
It's the Kitten Factory. It's the name of the company.
Oh, you pledge $2,000. You get the carbon. You get the Ascender plus build your own skis.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Who wouldn't want skis like right? Around that? Build your own. You got $849 or more. You get this Ascender plus skis that they make.
Must be in Salt Lake City.
Boom.
Wow.
Yeah, they're out of Salt Lake. It's nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. So yeah, hopefully this gets this somehow. They're able to come up with enough money and make this happen because this is really cool.
Two straps limiting. So you don't get the Ascender until you hit 250 or more. So I guess they're pretty. Yeah, they're pretty badass though, because you don't need extra bindings.
No.
So this thing turns your regular bindings into Telemark bindings with a little clip.
Telemark, really? Well, I mean, really more just, backcountry all terrain bindings. Yeah.
Well, if you look at the video, it's kind of like a Telemark almost. I mean, it puts the pivot on the front, and then you strap in, you snap into that, and that's kind of where you're going. I like it.
Yeah. It's really cool.
It's a great idea. Instead of buying whole new bindings and everything, I mean, crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy generous.
It's good stuff. All right. So, want to grab the next one?
Don't I? So, we have the Racy Suits on Kickstarter. So, it's Bring Grandpa's Ski Suits from the 80s. I tell you what, for the ladies, this looks pretty goddamn good. For the guys, hey, it looks like the back hatch pajamas, you know, that you've seen on the Bugs Bunny cartoons. But they got cool designs. So the Racy Suits, so the idea is started with somebody's grandfather. That's what gave him the idea. And they put psychedelic prints on them and stuff. And it's kind of like, you know how they have those high-tech downhill slalom racer suits and everything? It's kind of doing those, but with a lot of fun. So I kind of like these. They almost are, I got to say, they're so cool and retro. They're like 70s throwback. They're like one piece. These are One Piece worthy.
Yeah, they're yeah, you pretty much hit the nail on the head with that. I mean, they're so out there, but they just sort of somehow make sense in today's day and age, you know? Like, it's like, this is, there's so many things that are retro now and coming back from that era that this just, this makes sense to have.
Well, and with the modern materials, like, everything's so, you know, the tech fibers and the tech materials they have, like, they'll keep you warm. So I've noticed, well, I don't know why I've noticed, but, you know, some of the ladies have been wearing the skin tight, you know, bottoms, which are great. They're just warmer now. So now this is a whole suit, which is excellent. I think it's very cute, very trendy. I like it.
Yeah, they're not exactly cheap. That's the one thing to be mindful of. But
so what are they starting at to actually get one of these bad boys?
$199. So you get the one racy suit unitard of your choice. Well, I mean, then again, you could go buy a pair of those Lululemon pants for $70 anyway. So
that's true. You get a
full suit that actually is a lot warmer.
Well, all honesty, like $199, you could pay that just on a pair of ski pants.
Very, very easily, yeah.
So you got the whole piece and you don't need a jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Jacket's optional, you know?
Yeah, and it's cool. If you go to their website, you can go to, you see all the different ways you can customize them, because you can buy a custom made one too, and you can control, you know, what the print is on the outside. You can control the lining, the zipper, the way the leg tapers.
Highfalutin Ski Bum logo all over that unitard.
I don't know if they customize exactly the pattern for the outside. I mean, they have a collection right now of about, you know, 15 or maybe 10 or 15 different styles. But, you know,
I think
maybe
they should add to the collection. That'd be nice.
I'm sure we can talk to them about that and maybe make that happen. Yeah. It's not a bad idea.
HFSB, the logo all over the outside. That'd be pretty badass right there.
And my question is who wouldn't want that?
Who wouldn't want it? That's right. That's right? The only one they would be. The only reason they wouldn't want to do that is because maybe they wouldn't sell the other versions. Like, they would just, everybody would want that.
They'd be like, you know what? We have to work way too hard, like 24 hours a day because of the demand for the highfalutin ski bum pattern.
Yeah. You guys are killing us because everybody wants this.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Kind of makes sense now. Now that you mentioned it that way.
All right, I like these though. These are really cool. And I tell you, like, you know, the skin tights, like I said, for the ladies, these are pretty sexy for the ladies. Like, if you got a, you know, if you got a nice lady, you want to see her in a nice little sexy outfit. I mean, you can wear it for the inside too. You know what I'm saying? Works well.
Yeah. There you go. So here's one thing that we saw on Indiegogo, and I think we talked about this a few months ago. This was the Carve, C-A-R-V, and it was the world's smartest ski wearable. And what it does is it analyzes your skiing technique in real time. Now, this was something that it finished up. It closed out on April 8th of this year. But this is an example of something that, you know, you'll see it on here, and you're kind of like, I want to get this, but, you know, I want it now. But unfortunately, with these projects, they can be a little bit funky, but with patience, sometimes it'll come through and your project will get funded and you'll have an awesome product in a few months. And this one now, that was funded back in April, they're starting to get things out to people for this upcoming season, which nice. Is really, I mean, that's, you know, you obviously are excited when you know, kickstart these things, or
they get him in time for the Olympics. We got to get some gold medals.
Yeah. So this one, they're going to start shipping these out in the very near future. They're saying January of 2017. So it's just a few months away, early in the ski season, that you'll be able to get these and get all your, you know, ski techniques and analytics. And it's a lot of really cool information. So again, you don't have everything right away, but with a little bit of patience, there's some awesome products that can, you know, be in your ski quiver in the very near future.
You know, I go back to the Warren Miller movies where he says, if you don't do it today, you'll be 1 year older when you do it.
Mm.
This stuff now, because you never know if you're even going to be around in a year to do it. Just saying, very true. or be able to get on the slopes. Global warming, you know, Obamacare. I don't know what's going on.
Trump. I mean, lots of things could change.
Trump. I don't know. Stuff is going crazy now.
Hillary. Yeah, anything.
Yeah. I mean, what's the super volcano?
Super volcano Yellowstone. Yeah, it's there. It's lingering. It's waiting. It can go anytime.
Anybody been to Yellowstone and seen the super volcano, aka the geyser?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that shit's gonna blow someday. Just hopefully not now.
Yes, but you never know.
I was talking about a trip to go see the Northern Lights, and the first thing somebody said to me is like, "You gonna go over there? Aren't there volcanoes and stuff?" I was like, "What?" I'm like, "Yeah, there are volcanoes. There's active volcanoes." I'm like, "But
there's volcanoes everywhere."
I shouldn't stop you. I'm like, I guess like shit's been erupting. Like, I don't know. And I actually Googled it. I'm like, yeah, there's nothing active right now.
Oh God. People want an excuse to not do something. You know, if they have an excuse like, oh, well, there might be a fire there. There might be a storm there. There might be a volcano there. They can get in their little shell and avoid doing the thing that takes them out of their comfort zone.
There are so many naysayers. I tell you what, like, there actually was like Iceland had like a few or one volcano that erupted and like it affected like European travel for a while because it like messed up like the airspace. Like, remember that?
Yeah, wasn't that around the time of the Olympics or something?
Yeah, it was a few years ago. Yeah, I think it was. And yeah, it messed things up. And that was the first thing, like, that's what they're referring to. I'm like, dude, that was like 4 years ago, like 2 years ago. Like, it was a while. It wasn't like yesterday. It was just funny. I was like, that was the first thing out of the mouth. I'm like, yeah, okay, so you're not open to like going anywhere outside of your neighborhood.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm thinking about going to Phuket, Thailand for a vacation. Wasn't there a tsunami there?
That's
like, yeah.
There you go. I'm thinking about going to New York City. Oh my God, you could get knifed there or mugged. Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
Don't watch the news, the 5 o'clock news.
Yeah, I'll just be scared of everything.
Yeah, it's horrible. I actually made the mistake of watching the news this week. I was like, holy shit, I don't want to move from my house.
Yeah, that's all they want to do is just keep you in gripping fear so you don't want to go anywhere or do anything or think differently or evolve or grow. They want you to just be scared and just drink Pepsi and eat Fritos and get fat and be on 15 medications and just be a leech on the system. That's all they want.
Dude, Xanax's not going to sell itself. I'm just saying.
It's true. Pay your taxes, drink your Coors Light, and go to McDonald's.
And don't smoke any weed. I'm just saying.
Don't smoke any weed. Don't get any smarter. They don't want any of that stuff.
Don't ski. Don't want to ski. Or bored. You know.
Just get fatter and dumber. That's what they want.
Fat, dumb, and paying taxes. That's all you got to do.
That's it. That's what they want.
Anyway.
All right. Last one of these.
Yeah, so last one, Kickstarter, we have Axis Freestyle Indoor Dry Slope and Ski and Snowboard. So this is a freestyle academy in Canada's all-year-round dry slope. And what the dry slope is, it's almost like a carpet over, like, everything. And you have these cool skis that actually, like, I don't know if they're acrylic or whatever's on the bottom. Like, they go down these slopes, which is pretty cool. So they have a 20,000 square foot facility equipped with a bunch of jumps and rails and trampolines and foam pits. And what they want to do is they're trying to raise money because they want to make this more accessible and cooler to everybody. So some of the things they want to do is build like a launcher in the foam pit. They want to purchase more cubes and crash mats. For added protection, they want to put more jibs and features and training equipment. So they want to really like just step this up. And I think it's a pretty cool concept because we actually talked a few podcasts ago about like indoor ski areas where they're actually blowing snow. Yep. And this is, they don't have to blow snow. It's like they're just building all this stuff. It almost looks like a skate park when you look at the video, and they're skiing and boarding down, which is pretty neat.
Yeah, it's really cool. Yeah, it does look almost... It looks almost like the carpet you have on like your car floor mats.
Yes.
That's what it looks like from far away. But yeah, it looks, you know, you got a picture of what the skis look like? Are they unique? Are they different? Or is it just regular skis you use?
No, they look like skis, but they have some other material on the bottom.
Oh, okay.
Like it's not the same.
Like skinning almost, like a skin or something they put underneath it, or
no, I think they're made differently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I don't know, it looks pretty damn good. I gotta say, like, you know, we talked, like I was talking about that the Rise of Superman book that I read. And I tell you what, like this adds into that. Like you talk about everything that's been available to kids as you're growing up, or even to adults as you go and you go on through life. Like, when was all this stuff available? It wasn't available to you until you were in ski season. You had the ability to ski. You had the money to ski. You had somebody who's going to take you. Now this is going to be available in urban areas. So you have somebody that can actually learn how to ski or actually hone their ability or all season train, when they used to never be able to do that. And I think it's pretty amazing time that we live in, that we're fortunate enough to have that. You know, we're fortunate for many reasons in this country, because we have this, you know, and this is Canada, and Canada's, you know, part of that. They're fortunate as well. But I think, you know, it's amazing to see this technology and be part of it, you know?
Oh yeah. And you know, kind of going back to what you were just talking about with the Olympics going on now, you watch these athletes, and they always show like the older clips, and you see, you know, the Olympics from, you know, 1936 in Berlin, and what the athletes look like, and you look at what they look like now. And, you know, part of the reason why the athletes now look the way they do is because of, you know, science and, you know, people figuring out what works, what doesn't work. I mean, how much training do you think those athletes did in 1936? You know, they were probably, they had to work full-time jobs. They had to make sure their family wasn't starving. They had to make sure they weren't having dysentery. You know, there was so many other problems that people had to deal with on a daily basis. Where now, you know, you what's your biggest problem? Oh, I got to train for a couple hours. I got a personal trainer. I got a personal chef. I got to make sure all my social media accounts are updated. That's what the life of an Olympian is like. It's just very, very different. I mean, again, you know, every athlete is unique, definitely, and different stories and backgrounds and upbringings. But the amount of accessibility and availability to these training regimens and different environments where they can train to become the best they can be at their sport is so much more available now than it used to be.
Yeah, it's crazy. I tell you what, and did you see that Katie Ledecky swim the other night?
Oh, and she won by like 11 seconds.
And she beat her own world record by 2 seconds. And I'm like, so here we have like a world record that for time has never changed. So now they're keeping these world records, and we're just pushing that envelope of like what people can do. I mean, there's a book that I have on my reading list of the first person that broke the 4 minute mile. And the whole idea was that the 4 minute mile was never going to be broken. And everybody, oh yeah, I can't break the four. And it was that mental conception that you never could break that 4 minute. And then when somebody broke it, it was like, oh yeah, breaking it every day. And now like, that's the standard. I mean, Katie Ledecky, she's pushing that envelope of like, here's where everybody else you have to be. Like, this is where we're at as a society. This is where like swimming, competitive swimming has to be, you know what I mean? And whatever's involved in that, like, it's kind of like, hey, you know, take a, it's one of those things when you beat other athletes that bit by that much, it's a sign to them that you have to change what you're doing, and you have to maybe model yourself more after out of that person that's doing that incredible thing. You know, it's to push yourself. You know, Michael Phelps, he's a freak. He is a freak of nature, you know, in an incredible way, but, I tell you what, I mean, who can swim that well, you know? I mean,
oh yeah,
he's part fish.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. There was some stat they were saying that Michael Phelps's first Olympic gold in, I forget what discipline it was, if it was the butterfly or the combined freestyle, but they're saying that when he won it back in 2004, I guess. So this is his fourth Olympics. The time he set then in 2004 and won the gold medal is now what the women are doing in that same discipline.
That's wild.
So it's just, yeah, I mean, it kind of plays into exactly what you were talking about, how, you know, the the sports just evolve and grow, and people keep pushing things all the time.
And well, here's the amazing thing. Like, so Michael Phelps, he's at an amazing point in his career, right? Like, even, you know, they say it's the last Olympics, he's older, whatever. He's still swimming incredibly well, right?
He's at an age of 31 years old.
Yeah, but he got beat the other yesterday by a kid that took a picture with him when Phelps just started, like, big on the scene, I think, after the first Olympics. Took a picture with this kid from Singapore that beat him yesterday in, I think it was, I don't know if it was a freestyle. I forgot which event it was.
Or was it a fly? 100-meter butterfly, maybe?
I think it was a fly, yeah. And that kid beat him. And there's this picture of, like, I think the kid was, like, I say kid, he's older now, but he was, like, 14 or 15 at the time. And he took a picture with Phelps, and now he beat him, and he got gold. And, like, that was the shared, like, you know, the three silvers. And it was pretty amazing to see that. It's like you look at, like, so here are these people passing down, like, here are some tips, here's what you should aspire to. And it's amazing because we're developing as, like, as human beings. You know, it's pretty incredible.
The student has become the teacher.
That's right. That's right. But I tell you what, you know, they interview him after it, and you could tell, like, he was satisfied being beat. He's like, you know, the guy beat me. I swam a good race. But the guy beat me. And I think somewhere in there has to be, he beat me and I inspired him to beat me. So it's kind of full circle. Like, I inspired the guy and he did what the inspiration should have done, is make him better than me, which is it's amazing. You know, it's great. It's like full circle.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's pretty cool stuff.
And one thing that has to get brought up, Michael Phelps, greatest Olympian of all time, also a pothead. So they want to say that weed and cannabis is a gateway drug. Yeah, it's a gateway to becoming the greatest Olympian ever.
To becoming awesome.
Yes. So let us not lose sight of that.
Okay. I just want to know, in other Olympic news, let's go back to the Olympics. So the dude that snapped his arm, was he a pothead?
No, that was his problem.
Was he doing weed or was he doing steroids? Because
He got too damn nervous. He freaked out and snapped his arm.
God,
if he was a little more mellow, he wouldn't have had that problem.
What country was he with? Because I tell you what, he snapped his arm. It was disgusting.
Was he Armenian, maybe, I think?
I don't know. It was crazy. Yeah. It was Qatar. I'd be like, yeah, whatever. They paid for those dudes. That you got to watch the real sports on Qatar. They have a whole background of, like, how they bought athletes. It's disgusting. It's,
oh, yeah. I remember watching, I think it was the 100-meter – the semis to get into the final race, and they showed this guy, and I guess it's pronounced Qatar now.
Yeah, Qatar or Qatar. Yeah, it depends. Yeah. Like the whatever.
I'm like, that dude looks like a regular black dude from anywhere in the world except Qatar.
So this Real Sports did a whole thing on Qatar, and they were interviewing the athletes. They actually give them a contract. They say, okay, you're now Qataris, like, you have we give you citizenship and you work for us, you change your name, they change it to some, you know, regional sounding name and everything. It's crazy.
And you get three slaves and you got to set a woman on fire.
It's
as part of your citizenship, right?
It's nuts because they're like, well, we have all this money and we want to be known in the world stage. So they go out and they buy Olympic athletes. It's nuts.
Oof, that's crazy. That's all you can do.
Yeah, and that was last Olympics. Who knows how far they've gotten in this Olympics too? It's just nuts.
Yeah, yeah. That Olympic weightlifter who, you know, snapped his arm. Yeah, he was Armenian.
God damn, that was. Oh, I can't even think about that.
And it's funny. You look at a 20-year-old Armenian. He looks like a 40-year-old American. just a rough-looking people, man. Hard living over there.
Yeah, or he really is 40 and he's just saying he's 20.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a dislocated elbow.
Man. Oof. That was – I tell you what, he had a lot of weight on there. It freaks me out when I look at that. That's why I can't watch the weightlifting.
That's why I'm a fan of the Nautilus machines.
If there was a Nautilus weightlift, now, man, I'm watching it, bro.
429 pounds.
God damn.
Oh, clean and jerk.
I I'm always afraid they just drop it on themselves.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there was that, and there was that the gymnast, the French gymnast, who snapped his leg in half.
God, that was horrifying. Unfortunately, you told me about that, and I hadn't seen it before, and then I watched it before this podcast, and I was like, I can't unwatch it. It's horrible.
Yeah.
The guy was even freaked out looking at his own leg. Like, that was the crazy part. He looks at his own leg, and he's like, oh, while everybody else is going, oh.
Yeah, and then also too, they take him into the ambulance, and they freaking drop the gurney, get him into the ambulance.
Oh, that's crazy.
Is anything working right in Rio? I mean, come on.
Oh man, that's crazy.
This is why you can't have nice things, Rio.
I want to see the sailing in Rio. That's what I want to see. I want to see like, hey, this so and so's in the lead, and oh, they just hit a couch. I'm sorry. They had to go around the couch that's there.
It's like the X Games.
Yeah, that's right. It's like extreme. Oh, it's horrible.
All right. So that about wraps up ski news for the week. If you want any more information or you want any links to any of this goodness we've been talking about, skibumppodcast.com. We'll be tweeting out the link to the page as well with all the information on twitter.com/skibumppodcast and on facebook.com/skibumppodcast.
Yeah.
That's right. It is time for Around the Horn. So we were just talking about the Olympics for a little bit. So Mario, why don't you kick it off with another Olympic-related story?
So one of the things we all noted, which was pretty cool, was the Lindsey Vonn What Winter Olympians Do in the Summer Olympics commercial. So yeah, I think it was for Reese's. It was a really cool commercial. I thought it was awesome. They show her trying to get on a horse, and they show her, like, you know, what was the other?
Is it rhythmic gymnastics?
That's what I'm trying to wonder. It's some kind of gymnastics. I guess it's rhythmic gymnastics, right?
They use that ribbon, and they kind of, like, spin it around.
Yeah, and she's like all tied up, like pretty much. It's actually pretty funny. It's cool to see Lindsey Vonn doing stuff.
Yeah, it was funny. It's one of the funnier commercials you're gonna see, because there's a lot of awful, stupid, terrible commercials on, especially the ones for Comcast, which are the worst.
Oh yeah, and there's a ton of them, so it's like they pound you with those.
Yeah.
And then the iPhone one, which is constantly on the
Well, the one for the iPhone or the one for Google to get the Google Photos service because your iPhone is always full.
Oh, that one I love.
That one's funny, right?
That's funny as hell. The other one is for like the iPhone or whatever. Like I've noticed people or whatever he's like going through, and it's a good commercial, but they play it like every break. I'm like, I can't see this fucking commercial anymore.
Yeah, iPhone, they're trying to get too sentimental, but the one that Google Photos has where
it's hilarious. It's
like for their automatic upload service, and they're showing you take it, like there's like an epic thing happening. They're showing all these classic, you know, moments internet history, and they go take a picture, and it's like the message pops up that says your phone is full.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's really funny, yeah.
Yeah, it's hilarious. They got Queen in the background, the Don't Stop Me Now, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. It's a good commercial.
Yeah.
No, the other one I'm talking about for the iPad or iPhone, and it's a good commercial, good artistic, it has good meaning, but it's like, I can't see this fucking commercial anymore.
Yeah.
It's over and over. They did that with, what was it, football with the not the GoDaddy, it was like the betting thing.
Go Bodog. DraftKings and
DraftKings. It's like every goddamn commercial break. I'm like, I can't see another one of these commercials. I can't. I'm gonna go nuts if you show it to me.
Well, the commercial that I'm kind of excited about, but it's also driving me crazy, is the one for Sunday Night Football they keep showing.
Oh, so really?
I'm excited about Sunday Night Football coming, because that means fall is here and things are gonna cool down. But they keep showing like Carrie Underwood and her stupid voice and then. And that think of that terrible, terrible song they sing. Oh,
they love that song though. Somebody loves it.
So bad.
I don't know why they don't change it every year. Like, why wouldn't I know when they went to it? I was like, oh, that sounds cool for what they got, and they were changing it every year, and then they just stayed with that. And it's like, I don't really get it.
Because it was Shania Twain at first, right?
Yeah, and she sounded like that fitter voice and all that. And it was, you know, whatever. And then they kept the song. It's like, yeah, I don't know.
Isn't Carrie Underwood married to a hockey player?
Oh, is she?
I think she is. Is it Mike Fisher I think she's married to?
She likes football better than hockey. That's all I could say.
Yeah. Wait a minute. That's okay. Let me see if this is true. Carrie Underwood husband. Yeah, it's Mike Fisher. So I get it now. She should have taken his last name, but then she would have been Carrie Fisher.
And
people
awesome.
Are gonna think she's Princess Leia, so she can't do that.
I would do that. Why not?
Why not?
Carrie Fisher. Why not?
I'm Carrie Fisher too.
Well, Carrie Fisher is Carrie, C-A-R-R-I-E.
So is she. Carrie Underwood.
Oh, she is.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carrie Fisher would work. Why not?
She would be Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, I think that's a better choice.
Yeah.
Because I think about, you know, Mr. Underwood from House of Cards.
Frank Underwood?
I'm thinking Mr. and Mrs. Underwood. Is she one of the Underwood kids? Is she the kid of Frank Underwood?
Oh.
Is she related to Frank Underwood? Maybe she is. Google that.
Maybe she is. Is she even real? Is Frank Underwood real? Is she real?
What does it say after I update Wikipedia? It's a saying.
Mm.
She is the spawn of Frank Underwood, Frank and Claire Underwood. In a fictional House of Cards. So she's a fictional person then.
That's true. It's true. I don't think she really exists.
So why not Carrie Fisher? That's all I'm saying. Princess Leia. She should just rename herself Princess Leia.
And that works too.
Ipso facto. So anyway, getting back to Lindsey Vonn. I love that commercial.
It's pretty good. That was very roundabout way to get there, but yes, we got there.
Yeah, I love it. And actually, after I saw that commercial, it was funny because I was like trying to look up like which athletes have done summer and winter games. And there are a few that have won medals in both winter and summer. I think one was an American boxer. I forgot. And then the other ones are like other countries and stuff. But I'm like, that's pretty damn impressive. You could do both seasons. I mean, you're training all year round.
Didn't Lolo Jones, wasn't she like a hurdler for the U.S. in the summer games? And then I think she tried to do bobsled after too.
Yeah, there was that was the boxer. He did the I don't think she won a medal, though. These were people that won a medal. I think she competed. So that guy, what was it? Herschel Walker did the bobsled, right?
Yeah. He's in like MMA too. Like he's just
really.
He's just a badass. Yeah. He was fighting in Strikeforce a couple years ago.
Strikeforce. It sounds like a, you know, I have a problem in this country. I need to send in Strikeforce.
Yeah, right.
They should do that. Just like
Team America.
It's, instead of sending soldiers, just send in the MMA guys to beat everybody's ass and like, you know, send them in Iraq. Just boom. Beat ass in this neighborhood.
54-year-old Herschel Walker is seeking another MMA fight.
Wow.
God. Dude, he looks fucking awesome for 54.
Does he?
Jesus Christ. He's just yoked.
Wow.
When he was fighting in Strikeforce, he was jacked and shredded.
Let's look at his Twitter. Let's see what he has on Twitter. Oh, he looks jacked.
Right?
Wow, he looks better than he did when he was playing.
He's just a freak athlete. There's just no way around that.
He looks a little fatter when he was playing, but now he looks all lean and...
Well, I mean, you got to be a little bit bigger to take all that impact of however many, you know, rushes he had.
They have a picture of him from, like, old time. He's a...
Thank you. Thank you, dipshit website, for giving NASCAR footage I don't want to see.
Uh-huh. Hey, why don't you watch this NASCAR footage, Brian? I know you want to.
Damn. Can't go there and wait.
Can't go there and wait.
Maybe we got to start another podcast, Highfalutin NASCAR Fan.
Oh, there you go. You know they're out there. They're listening.
Yeah.
You're the Dale Earnhardt of goddamn podcast, Brian.
The Dale Earnhardt of ski podcast. People want us to crash headfirst into a wall. You know what? Oh. Fuck you. We're not going to do it. We're going to keep it.
And we're back to Lindsey Vonn.
And if we do, we're going to haunt your goddamn souls. So, you know, you don't want that either way.
And we're back to Lindsey Vonn.
Oh.
She had a really bad cut.
Yeah. All right. Next story. Boom. We're moving on. Robo. This is a Dynamite new product. So what this is a smart indoor gardening system.
It's like a grow robot.
It looks almost like a, a really like a larger wine fridge, maybe like a double size wine fridge
with a lot of goodness inside.
With, you know, it's clear. It's, you know, you use it for obviously for growing, for planting, and it's smart. So it's connected to your phone. So you can, you know, create different conditions based on what you're growing in there. And
it looks like a baller ass fish tank without having any fish or water.
Awesome. Yeah, fish tank / wine fridge. That's kind of, and you can put anywhere in your house, you know, as long as you can plug it in. And you can grow, according to the website, you can grow vegetables like tomatoes, beans, and peppers.
So that's all it would be used for.
Herbs, basil, oregano, rosemary, exactly. Medicine like cannabis or chamomile.
Whoa. I'm stuck on herbs. I don't know about any medicine. Maybe tomato plants could be medicine, right?
You can grow fruit. We're saying tomatoes are vegetables, which is actually incorrect because tomatoes are fruit. Technically fruit.
Yes.
So you can grow strawberries and dwarf lemons or greens such as kale, wheatgrass, and arugula. And I feel like with every category, they're pretty much saying you can grow weed.
It's not explicitly stated, but I'm sure it could be modified. Well, they do have, I looked at the website, they have a custom setting, right? So the custom can be whatever you want to grow.
Well, no, I mean, it says medicine. One of the categories is medicine, medical cannabis or chamomile.
I'm just saying custom. I can get a dinosaur egg. I want to hatch a dinosaur egg in that motherfucker. I'm going to put the custom setting on. I got Jurassic Park in my house.
You can make just that
saying.
Happen.
Just saying. Khaleesi, boom, I got the Grobo. I don't need any fire.
You can grow people, apparently.
I'm hatching dinosaur eggs, man.
Growing dinosaurs and dragons.
I'm growing dragon eggs.
You can make it happen. So some of the features that it has automatic watering. And I guess, you know, within that settings on your smartphone, you can control when it's going to water it. You can control the temperature and the humidity. You've got special LED lights that create the perfect amount of color and light covering an 8-color spectrum. You've got fluid glass that switches from transparent to opaque at the push of a button. So you can see your plants, but also give them darkness they need to grow.
Nice.
You've got a carbon filter. So whatever smell your organic product may have, it can filter it away. Again,
well, that's very important because there are some kinds of plants that need darkness for 12 hours and 12 hours. You got to make sure that that's pretty correct.
Yeah. And it's got Wi-Fi capability, of course, so you can, you know, connect to it and, you know, control your settings from your phone.
And the NSA can just tap right into that, or or local police just tap right in, or do they let you know at a time?
Back door does that app have? Right, yeah, right to the old sheriff's office.
Do they give you an email alert when they're tapping in, looking at stuff? Or?
Yeah. So the Grobo, it's coming soon. You can pre-order it now. They're offering $400 off if you pre-order it. So it's going for $899. You also put down a $200 deposit and have it by April of 2017. So again, kind of like our whole Kickstarter Indiegogo main topic we had today. This is along the same lines, but I guess they have full funding already. So they're just need some orders and they're going to build it out for you and have it ready to go.
Boom. Wait, how much does it cost to get one of those?
$899.
It's a bargain.
It's under really 10, not bad.
Under $10, I'm good.
It's not too bad.
Under $10, yeah, sure. That works.
You got this.
All right. Yeah, that's. I like that. I like that. So next we have a story. There are fake chalets in Switzerland. And this came about. There was an artist, a photographer, that actually did a book of these. What they actually are bunkers that look like Swiss chalets, like up in the Alps. So in the Swiss Alps, and I've seen this on several like history shows and shit like that, and they show like these bunkers like in the middle of these like really cute, quaint little towns. And I guess they, like the Swiss Army and like, you know, back when, you know, World War II, especially World War I, they actually set up these bunkers because they had planes flying over and all sorts of stuff going on. But these chalets are awesome because they actually look like real chalets. And when you look at them, they're like, you know, they have like 5-foot concrete walls. Like it's crazy. And on the outside, it's just like a faux, like even the shutters sometimes are just painted on. So it's pretty cool because if you look from far away, you're like, oh, that's a cute little house, a cute little chalet. And you don't realize, like, it's a solid-ass bunker.
It's just like a fortress, and it's just packed with armament and ammo and guns and
it's grenades. Yeah. They have one. They show the actual blueprint of it, and it's got a wood roof. But under that wood roof, there is, like, solid three stories of concrete. The walls are, like, 4 foot thick. And they have it built out where they could have, like, you know, gun nests in there and stuff. And it's pretty nuts. It's crazy. Like, you could just be, like, passing by and be like, oh, yeah, look at that little house. And all of a sudden, this freaking howitzer are going out, you know?
Yeah, there's some of them. There's one picture they're showing where they have the window. And it looks, you know, from far away, it looks like a window with shutters. But as you get close up to it, you see it's painted on and there's some sort of tube or I don't know what exactly it is. You know, coming out of what is the looks like the front of the house, and you know the window has this like curved texture that's coming out of the wall. It's
and those are the shutters crazy. Painted on, right?
Yeah, it's
crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I had to take a double take on that. I was like, wait, those shutters are painted.
Yeah,
nuts. It's pretty cool though.
It's a cool book too. Yeah, it's called False Chalets, and it's just a. Collection of that this photographer took of all these crazy, you know, fake chalets that are out there in Switzerland.
That is really cool.
Really neat.
And you don't even know they're out there. It's just Switzerland. You're like, oh, yeah, they're neutral, you know.
Sure, they're never on anybody's side.
Yeah, they have bunkers, though. They're getting ready. They were waiting for some shit to happen.
Mm-hmm. All right, next story. So this is a weird story, but very cool. So, not aliens, but megastructure star keeps getting stranger. As last year, astronomers noticed something very odd about a star called KIC 8462852. It was experiencing huge, unexplainable dips in brightness. And the theory was that people kind of grasped onto was that aliens were building a giant megastructure around it.
Which, yes, of I course, remember that.
Is mildly terrifying, but it. That is most certainly wrong. But what they're saying now is that the star has still been, you know, decreasing in brightness. But they have discovered that it seems to be like morphing, right?
Weird shit, though. They have like all this weird like data coming in. They said it's just like absolutely unexplainably just strange. Like you and these scientists are like, yeah, it just looks strange to us.
Mm-hmm. So they believe that it's not aliens building a structure around it, but they really can't prove that it's not.
Yeah, these are also the guys that like have a $400 hammer and can't figure out like what else is going on, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's weird. It's a pretty cool story, though.
Yeah, they said that they There's one theory is that it's a swarm of interfering comets, but even that has kind of been, you know, debunked.
I like the artist rendering on the article where it looks like they're forming a person.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, they're saying, but some people are saying that this has been dimming for a century now. But also that they've been using different telescopes. So it seems, maybe it just seems that it's getting dimmer.
Well, this feeds into the whole original theory that aliens are like operating there because they're like, what is covering? Because it's like happening like very sporadically, like all these differences they're seeing. So could it be stuff like moving in front of the light that they're seeing? That's where they got the whole aliens building stuff in the first place. Because they're like, oh yeah, they're covering, you know, they're blocking stuff and they're not blocking stuff. I mean, who knows? It could be just something blew up there and it's floating around.
Yeah.
Could be the Death Star too. I mean, it could be the Death Star is hiding stuff after it blew up the stuff. Mm. Just saying.
That is possible. So many mysteries.
We'll probably find out about this mystery in about 20,000 years. So, you know, we'll reconvene then.
Yeah, so hopefully you can come back to this podcast to get the original story of how we responded and what we thought was happening. So I guess hopefully there won't be any egg on our face, but we'll find out in 20,000 years.
See, when they listen to this podcast, it'll be like us listening to a podcast from like the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Like just barely have like sound and like black and white. And they'll be like, oh my God, these guys did a podcast on audio? What's wrong with them?
They'll just have it the chip in their head. As soon as they have the thought, it'll start playing.
That's right. And they'll be like, oh my God, this is so low quality. It's old school. All right, so next we got a driver reverses his Mercedes over a rare $300 Ferrari 458 Spezial at a Virginia car show.
There's one error in your statement. You said he. It was actually a woman.
Oh, really?
Oh, it certainly was.
Wow.
Yeah.
All I know is the person that owned the Ferrari was looking. Is that where he is? Because his only comment was, are you fucking serious? He asked the driver. And he said, that is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And the video was great because they have video of somebody that was there. And I guess this person just backed out their Mercedes. And you have it clearly on the video. And all they did was they just backed out and I guess the Ferrari sat so low that the Mercedes rode right over the Ferrari. So they rode over the Ferrari, and they had, like, I think kids in the car and stuff, like, sitting in the middle, and it was ridiculous.
Yeah, the Mercedes was a convertible. So I think an old, like, one of those, like, 80s, the SL convertibles.
Oh, and they got stuck on top of the Ferrari.
And I don't even know how it could have happened. Like, I mean, the way this person must have turned to make this happen, it almost defies physics.
It was ridiculous. It was like, you couldn't do that if you were trying to do that.
Yeah. It's so ridiculous. It's so stupid.
But the best part is, like, if you're watching the video and you're just in horror because not only did they back over it, but they didn't stop. They're like, they're just trying to just go forward and leave. It's like, and that's where the comment came. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking serious?
Oh, could you imagine if that was your car, if that was your Ferrari or your exotic car and this complete dummy?
Oh, my God. And that's where they said, so the shocked woman that was driving the car said, oh, my God, I'm shaking. It's like, yeah, you just rode over a $300,000 car. That's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
Wow. She's probably texting, so it's all right.
Ridiculous.
It's good. She, LOL, I just want to say hi. Oh, I ran over Ferrari. Oh, let me just finish my text. Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Nobody wins in this whole thing. It's just bad.
Yeah.
So, want to see, we follow Ferrari on Instagram. Let's see if they put something out about it. It's pretty horrible. We should put that out there. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Ferrari would not find it awesome.
Nope. All right, so next up, so this was kind of an annoying ruling from the DEA. They have announced that they are still going to treat cannabis the same as heroin, and they're not going to reclassify it.
What?
They will continue to keep it as a Schedule I drug under the Controlled Substances Act along substances such as heroin and GHB.
So I don't understand. So if every state makes heroin legal in their state, how would, like, it's not the same. Like,
make heroin legal or cannabis?
No. I'm saying people have made cannabis legal in the state, recreational and medical.
Yeah.
And how can the federal government still classify it as a Schedule I or whatever it is?
Well, they're saying in the report, there is no evidence that there is a consensus among qualified experts that marijuana is safe and effective for use in treating a specific recognized disorder. That's what they had in their report.
So you had a big panel of unqualified experts that, it's horrible.
The DEA also stated there is a high potential for marijuana abuse that can lead to severe psychological or physical dependence. The report noted that 22% of the 19 million marijuana users in 2012 were dependent on the substance according to diagnostic criteria.
So
adorable.
Did they add alcohol into the same study? Because it's probably under the same.
Oh, the results would be probably three times worse.
Right. But, yeah. Oh, no, that's legal. Well, it's legal in the state.
But the people making the law is already making money off of that. So that can't be altered or changed in any way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty messed up.
Oh, it's just gross. It's just vile. It's pathetic, really.
I mean, the fact that like states have made it legal medically means there's a medical benefit to the to it as a drug, mm-hmm. right? Which is not the same as heroin.
Yeah.
Schedule one means there's no medical properties that are good for you at all. There's a lot of research being done. Like, I don't know how you can not say that it's
the problem too with it being Schedule One is, you know, since it is classified as having no medical properties or, you know, capabilities, that these, you know, research institutions and universities that would ordinarily be able to research this now can't get funding to do so because of the Schedule One classification. Yeah. So it's almost like a vicious cycle of, you know, you can't get the funding because it's Schedule One, then you can't test it because it's Schedule One because you can't get the funding.
Right. It's, yeah, you can't even test it to get it off of the Schedule One classification.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem too is, I mean, the DEA isn't going to say it's great because then they're going to have to fire, you know, half of the dummies who work there. And
I would imagine they'd want to move on to like the real bad drugs. Cause I tell you what, weed, I could understand busting somebody for growing their entire house full of weed.
Mm-hmm.
But for growing like one or two plants and bust, like, I think they have better things to spend their time on.
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you on that. Think about your job. Do you think someone is going to come up to, say you were doing whatever you're doing at work, and someone's like, Mario, I want you to work three times harder to figure out this problem instead. You're going to be like, fuck that. I'm doing the bare minimum to get by. That's really what the DEA wants to do. They want to keep their numbers. They want to keep growing their staff. They want to keep growing the size of their offices. Yeah. That's all they really care about is continuing their funding. And if they have this, you know, this boogeyman they got to keep chasing, then they can keep getting funding and keep getting more people to work there.
Hey, Heisenberger was right, man.
Ugh.
Heisenberg was right.
Mm. It's just a scam is really all it is. It's just a government agency that wants to get bigger and bigger and badder and get more money and more people into it. That's really what it is.
It's a shakedown, yep.
And more or less, it's a government shakedown. And Obama, if he wants to be this hope and change, you know, president, he still has a few more months. He could, with a sign, you know, quick movement of his pen, he could himself change the classification.
Yeah.
But he probably won't.
He's busy pardoning people and whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
Crazy.
He's actually been pardoning a lot of people who are in jail for weed. So, you know, there is precedent there if he wanted to do it. And what's crazy,
exactly.
Canada, who just hired, you know, they just elected, not hired, just elected Liberal Prime Minister Justin Trudeau last year. He's saying he's promised to legalize for recreational next year.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's going to be the biggest seller to the U.S. They're like, hey, we could be $1 trillion.
You know what? We want to help our citizens, and we want to, you know, take all the power away from the drug cartels.
Yeah.
Why would you want to do those things?
We want to be the best supplier of marijuana to the U.S. when it becomes legal.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? Right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's just vile what our government is doing to us, and we're letting them.
Yeah. So now we're going to get it legally from the north instead of getting it illegally from the south.
The north remembers.
Right. And instead of getting it from Mexico, we're going to get it from Canada.
There you go. Yep.
And we're going to pay top dollar for it from Canada. And they're going to be like, sure, we'll supply it to you.
Yep. Sounds good to me.
So speaking of Mexico.
Yes.
There is a river in Mexico that has turned into a toxic hell. So I believe that I got this off of Vice News, and they basically have El Salto de Huancatal. It was once a majestic waterfall where locals would fish, bathe, and play. And now they have like this air stinks of sulfur. There's a yellow tinge to the cascades.
Ugh.
And there are clouds, and they have a picture on the site of puffy white foam all over the goddamn falls that are drifting everywhere and flying in the air. It is so nasty.
I mean, it looks like a fun foam party, really, if you don't have the context of what's going
on. If you're not going to burn up and die drinking that water, you'd be like, oh, this is pretty fucking awesome. But, yeah, it's like somebody put, like, shampoo in the water or something. It's crazy.
Yeah. So what exactly happened then?
So they said years and years have gone by where authorities, like, people brought it to them, and the authorities just, like, with payoffs or whatever, just ignorance, they just ignored it. So, like, they're saying, like, like the whole river's getting polluted and more polluted, and they've done nothing for it. So they actually said in 2015, there were 72 deaths that are attributed to pollution from the river. Nice. Isn't that crazy? So they're just saying, like, it's basically a case of where, like, the government's ignored it, and now it's at a point where it is so toxic and so nasty that the government says, oh, we're going to do something about it. And they're like, well, it's too late. Like, it's too late to do something about it. Like, it's so goddamn polluted. So, yeah, it's just, it's really, but, you know, this is something that really needs to happen in Mexico, because now they're finally getting tired of the corruption. Like, the people are getting tired of the corruption and the lack of doing anything in their local community. So they're actually standing up and doing something about it. So, you know, now they're going through the whole, oh, we have insufficient funds to do anything about it, and who knows what's going to come out of it, but it's pretty nasty. It's, if you want to see a site of what can happen with pollution, unregulated pollution, that's probably it. They're saying 620 fatalities in the last 8 years.
Oof.
Caused by pollution.
Well, part of it too. I mean, they were allowed to pollute because these pharmaceutical companies would have cost more money for them to dispose of things correctly. And right. They somehow got into some sort of arrangement with local government to allow them to do what they did. So, yes. Again, it's government being corrupted and thinking short term and not thinking about what's best for the people. It's what's best for the people who are paying for their campaigns and keeping them in office.
It's nasty.
It's disgusting. It's disgusting both in what happened environmentally and what's going on with allowing that to happen.
I got to say, even if you don't give a shit about the environment, you look at that thing like, this just isn't right by the laws of nature.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. It's like whole on foam just like floating on there.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Ugh. So, all
right, bring us home.
All right, one last kind of cool story. So here is – there's next week is Monterey Car Week. And if you guys aren't familiar with that – it's a car auction that happens out in Monterey, California, and they have some of the most ridiculous, insane, valuable, collectible cars that go on, you know, on auction there every year. And in addition to cars, they also have some cool motorcycles. So this one that's going to be going on during the auction.
Looks awesome, right?
It's gorgeous. It is a never-before-ridden Lotus C-01 from 2014. Will be going to the Mecum auction in Monterey. And
wow.
It looks like a futuristic motorcycle. I mean, it's 12-piece carbon fiber shell, 175 horsepower engine, 6-speed transmission, carbon fiber wheels. I mean, these wheels are just made specifically for this model.
It's like a Batman thing, right?
It looks almost like Tron and Batman combined.
Yeah, I think they equate it to a Tron cycle. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. The example at auction is a first-year production. They only made 100 of them. Never been ridden. It's expected to fetch up to $450,000.
Damn.
Yeah.
Way to go, Lotus.
Whew.
You don't even know if it works. You don't even know if that's going to drive out of the show.
You know what? If you're the person who can afford that, I don't think you really care.
You're just going to roll it onto a truck and roll it into your showroom in your house.
Yeah, exactly.
That's crazy.
Oh, it is gorgeous, though.
I like the layout of, like, they have, like, a whole computerized layout for the for the whatchamacallit, the whatever the readout. There's no dials. It's like all digital.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's so cool.
That's a pretty nice looking
bike. All right. So I guess that wraps it up for the week then, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Good stuff this week. Yes, the Olympics are still going on. So hope you guys are out there enjoying that. And if you're not watching the Olympics, head on over to the website, skibumpodcast.com. I posted a trailer page this week. So we're going to keep updating that with any new trailers or teasers that come out. And hopefully in the next couple weeks, actually start talking about all the different trailers and reviewing them and giving you guys a heads up.
And it's getting closer.
What we're liking. Yeah, what's what we're feeling for this season coming up. So thank you guys again. SkiBumpPodcast.com. Check us out. Twitter.com/SkiBumpPodcast. Facebook.com/SkiBumpPodcast. Instagram.com/SkiBumpPodcast. We post an all week like we always do. Any cool things that we encounter, any news, any good information, and if you guys can go to iTunes and Stitcher and subscribe and rate us, we'd really appreciate that. And with that, we will see you guys in the next week or so.
Yeah. Stay high, stay polluting.
See you.